Emily, thank you very much for making time for us. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am very well, and you've done some fantastic work this week, and it is wide-ranging. But before we get to any of that, I wanted to talk about your work on television. Kudos to you for using your time on Around the Horn after your victory to share the story of Joey Moss. Why was that important for you to do?
You know, I spent a month in Alberta, and specifically in Edmonton, covering the bubble, and there was one takeaway for me. It was just the people's hospitability. Everyone was just so kind and welcoming. And when I learned more about Joey's story, I was just so touched by it. You know, hearing that Wayne Gretzky was the one to recommend him for this job, and it was Wayne who embraced him, and that let the other teammates embrace him, and the city embrace him, and it's been decades. And just even on my Instagram, we're seeing how many posts of players that I follow were posting about this guy. It was such an important message about inclusivity, you know, and it just shows why athletes can set the example sometimes. And, you know, it's a deep regret of mine. I was never able to meet Joey, but he just seemed like such a special person that brought people together. And quite frankly, that's what we need in these times.
Yeah, we certainly do. And it is a very powerful message. And I'm sure you've seen the tributes that have been pouring out over the course of the week. And one of the common threads, Emily, and I'm sure this is probably consistent with the people you talk to about Joey Moss, is that so many people have said, hey, everybody on the outside thinks it was, oh, here's what I'm doing for Joey. It was the reverse. Here's what Joey did for me. Here's how Joey made us feel so much better.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think he erased a stigma for many people about disabled people. You know, him having this job and just being one of the guys laughing with them. He's apparently always playing jokes and things like that. It just really proved that disabled people play an integral role in our communities and we need to embrace them.
What's the feedback been like since you made that appearance on Around the Horn and people were able to see that story brought to light that maybe didn't know about it before?
Yeah, no, I think there's people in Canada who are pretty grateful that it got attention south of the border. And here in the U.S., there were a lot of people maybe who didn't know Joey's story or didn't know it intimately. You know, a lot of people were like, is that the same guy that sang that national anthem at that playoff game a couple years ago? I was like, absolutely, it's the same guy. So it's all been pretty positive.
Excellent. Emily Kaplan of ESPN joining us here this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. And that story, though it was not Joey Moss specific, is somewhat intertwined with the story of Mitchell Miller because the bullying occurred against someone with developmental disabilities. And as you know, Emily, over the course of this week, there's been a very fierce debate about whether or not the Coyotes should have drafted Mitchell Miller. Fact is, they did. What should happen now?
It's a really great question. And, you know, I've had a couple conversations with Javier Gutierrez since he's been hired. And I know that diversity and inclusion is such an important thing for him. He's the new president of the Coyotes. And let's remember, this is a new ownership regime. They're trying to change the culture there. So I was a little shocked, quite frankly. I'm not really in tune with the scouting process. You know, I don't really follow this intimately. When I heard they drafted this kid, I was surprised just because of everything that I hear is coming out of their mouths from this organization. You know, I saw the report that the University of North Dakota and the Coyotes were thinking of using him in a anti-bullying campaign. I think that's absolutely not what we should be doing right now. How is this guy the example we should be looking up to if, as everything we've heard, he hasn't shown remorse or even apologized to his victim? I think what needs to be done now is work behind the scenes. And I do believe and hope that that's what the Coyotes are going to commit their efforts to. You know, continuing education for him, continuing education for other prospects in their system, for other players in their system to say, you know what, this is an awful, horrendous thing that happened, but let's use it as a teaching moment because this doesn't have any place in our game.
No question. And everyone agrees with that. If you're the Coyotes, if you're UND, is your first demand not you march over to that young man's house, you knock on that door, and I don't care how difficult it is, you apologize in person?
Yeah. You know, if I'm a coach, that's what I am trying to tell that player because maybe that's the relationship where it, you know, can reach him. But reading the comments from the victim's mother about the effects that he had from a mental health standpoint that trailed from this and the fact that it's still lingering on with him and he can't, you know, find closure because there has been no apology. Like, that's the easiest thing you can do. Now, empty apologies are no good. So you have to make sure that it's heartfelt and there's meaning behind it. But if I'm one of his coaches or maybe someone in a development program with the Coyotes, that is what I am leading for as step one. Absolutely.
Yeah, no question. And it does make a difference if it's in person. And obviously it makes a difference if there's actual remorse, actual contrition on the part of the young man. But if that's an ask that is made and that step is not taken, that tells you everything you need to know moving forward, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, I really hope the Coyotes say they had their own process. They were aware of the story. They talked to him. They knew when they were drafting the guy. But I really hope that behind the scenes, they're going to hold him accountable and they're going to hold him to a high standard. And, you know, I'm all for, hey, it's hard to just say cancel everybody, especially when they're so young. I'm all for an education and rehabilitation model, but people have to put in the work. And this kid right now, he's a teenager. He's got to put in the work. And I really hope there are benchmarks the Coyotes are looking at for him to reach. And if he can't, then you know what? Frankly, he doesn't deserve the privilege of being part of their organization or being part of this league.
Emily Kaplan of ESPN joining us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. Not that this is going to be all about teenage hockey players, but you've got a great read out this morning about another teenage hockey player in the United States who has found a platform to use it for the greater good. This has to do with mental health. Can you please explain a little more for our listeners?
And this girl is a rock star. Her name is Morgan Urso, and she is a teenage hockey player in Illinois, and she has been having a hard time. She was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. She also had some suicidal thoughts. She has an incredible supportive family. They went and got her therapy. She was in an outpatient program, and she thought it was the right thing to do to disclose this information to her coach. You know, all we're seeing in society right now, we see Robin Lehner talk about the importance of being open about your mental health. And what her coach did is he bumped it up to the governing association in the state, and their recommendation was she should not be a part of the team. And it was just such a horrific message to send to a young person to say, hey, if you're open about how you feel, we're going to exclude you. Like, that's the opposite thing we should be teaching. She's actually, you know, it was really awful the way this family was treated. They've actually filed a suit with the Illinois Department of Human Rights against the Disabilities Act, saying she was excluded because of her disabilities. But the reason the story kind of came to my attention is that, you know, it happened here in Chicago when Robin Lehner was wearing that mask, same here. She donated to an organization he was supporting. Then she reached out. Rob Schrempf, a former NHL player, had something very similar to happen to him. And they've actually developed a relationship, which is really a mentorship. And it's really special because he wants to prove to her, you know, there are good people in hockey. I'm sorry this happened to you. But the reason I wrote the story is just to show that while we're talking about this on a national stage, and I do believe we have progress, there's really a lack of attention and accountability at the youth level. And we have bad actors like this coach and this association really damning young people's lives.
It's a great point, and when you tell it that way, and when I read your story, it's unconscionable that somebody's reaction will be, oh, you're having a problem? You need to be separated from the group. It is so counterintuitive to anyone who knows anything about mental health and trying to support people in these times, but it does show how far we have to go, not just from a stigma standpoint, but from a learning standpoint, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, The excuse they gave, firstly, they just kept telling the parent, we're just hockey guys. Sorry, we don't know any better. Well, no, you can't just be a hockey guy when you're working for an organization which is supporting young people and supposed to grow the game. The other aspect of it that's really disturbing is that their reasoning for excluding her is they said, well, a couple years ago, we had two 19-year-old girls who had a suicide pact and they died, and we wouldn't want Morgan influencing any of her teammates. And Morgan is like, do you understand how mental health works? I never talked about it. This is all about me and what I'm going through. And then just to kind of jump from point A to point B and make those conclusions and, again, exclude her when physical activity and being around a team environment are two of the most healthy things for her. It's just really disturbing. So, yes, it's a huge education issue in this country, in the world, really.
Yeah, and where the silver lining that you can find in this story and in the stories around hockey, as we've been having these big conversations about racism and how to make things more inclusive, is that slowly, and it is slowly, I think we need to point that out, players are starting to realize the platform they have, and they're starting to realize that it's not good enough to just say, hey, I do the right thing. they need to be more influential with their platforms if they actually want change.
Totally. And I think you guys have an incredible role model in your market in Tyler Mott. He's a guy who doesn't have his career totally established yet, is still kind of finding his way in the league, and has been so candid about his diagnosis of anxiety and depression. And he says the reason that he wants to open up about it is just to show other people you can open up. And he started seeing a therapist, and it really helped him. And he's like, if I, a male hockey player in a macho sport, can prove that I can do this, maybe other people will be encouraged to, too. So I think people should really look at Tyler Mott as a role model. And I've just been so impressed by what he's done in a short time in the league.
Yeah, and credit to the Vancouver Canucks. Kevin Bieksa was at the forefront of it a number of years ago, and he was still with the organization. After Rick Rippon took his own life, there was obviously a lot of awareness, and the Canucks were forerunners in the National Hockey League in getting more awareness about mental health. It's still incredible to me that only approximately half the teams in the league have a night that puts the focus on that. It, again, shows how far we have to go. Emily Kaplan joining us this morning. She of ESPN joining the Scott Rintoul Show. This is a really big week for women's hockey, or at least potentially it was. $1 million investment from Secret, and they put that investment into the Professional Women Hockey Players Association. They did not go down the NWHL road. What is the significance of this investment?
You know, the players in PWHPA are fighting for a sustainable league. All they want is to be able to play hockey at a high level and be paid a living wage. These are, as we know, some of the most elite athletes in the world. We love watching them on the world stage. It does seem pretty ridiculous that they have no home to play in. So they're boycotting and they're sitting out. And what they've been saying is, we know what we're worth. We know what we're worth. And as Kendall Coyne Schofield told me, she's one of the best players here in the U.S., we keep saying that and saying that. And then for somebody to actually come from the outside and says, you know what, I believe in you too, this is what you're worth, that's monumental. So Secret giving $1 million to fund the Dream Gap Tour for 2021, it really sets the market. And, I mean, just think of it in sports terms. Like, when a goalie goes out and gets $7 million or whatever it might be, that's the new benchmark for a franchise goalie. I mean, it's much higher than that. It's more like 10. But any franchise goalie would never take less than that now. And so that's really why it's significant here, because these girls are saying, hey, if you want to get involved with us, like, this is what we're worth. And so it's really an incredible message. And, you know, as the NHL really shows no appetite to fund a league, especially right now, Hockey Canada and USA Hockey have been in line with their goals, but haven't backed that up with financial support. These ladies have really had to rely on corporate sponsorships, and a company like Secret leads the way.
And it does feel like the best avenue, in my opinion, and you're closer to it probably than I am, but I've been keeping tabs on this for a number of years now. It does feel to me like the best way for this to get where it should be is a partnership with the National Hockey League, the same way the NBA partnered with the WNBA, and we have seen how successful that league has become. Obviously, the NWHL is trying to go about it a different way, and I think it's important to point out that whether it's the Dream Gap Tour, whether it's the NWHL, everybody wants the same thing here. They're just going about it in different directions. Does this investment lead you to believe that people within the NWHL might reconsider the model they're currently using?
It's a tough question to answer. You know, it's so easy to say that the two sides are fighting, but you're right. They all want the same goal. It's just a different approach. And I think it's kind of fluid. Some days, some players on either side might agree with the other approach better. And it's just about what opportunity makes sense for that player in this time. I totally, totally agree with you, though. I think the best path going forward is if there is some partnership with the NHL to share their infrastructure and resources. History tells us that startup leagues, especially startup women's leagues, become successful when they are attached to pre-existing leagues. It just kind of breaks my heart because there was so much momentum for women's hockey and the NHL partnership going on right before the pandemic, you know, them involving them in the All-Star game, Gary Bettman coming to the locker room, telling the women privately, just stay patient, I'm with you. And I just worry that, you know, with so many things, the pandemic and financials will just be kind of used as an excuse, and things like women's hockey will fall to the wayside.
I hope not. I hope not. But yes, I understand where the fear is. Emily, we hear from the AHL over the last 24 hours that they are now targeting a February 5th start date. What should that tell us about what the NHL is realistically looking at?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure. I actually did talk to Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, this morning. And, you know, we did start talking about, you know, some time frames, and he dispelled some myths. Like, for example, the Stanley Cup doesn't necessarily need to be awarded before the Olympics for one reason at all. The Olympics aren't even a certain thing over the summer. And we know that that correlation is because of the shared TV partner in NBC. He said that they're obviously still modeling a lot of things. It's still premature. It's the same stuff you've heard him say. But the most interesting thing to me is that their goal and number one priority still is restoring a fully normal season in 2021 and 2022. Obviously, that's when the Seattle Kraken come in. There's a new US TV deal. So whatever we do see over the next couple of months with the NHL, I would expect it to have the 2021 to 22 normalcy as, you know, the priority, and that's what it's all kind of gearing towards.
Yeah, and that's what all of the arrows point to right now, don't they? You see this AHL announcement, and if you look back over the last 5 years, the AHL and the NHL have dropped the puck in their respective leagues within 3 days of each other. So it leads me to believe that Bill Foley a couple of weeks ago and the proclamation that maybe February 1st is when we're actually looking at, that feels a little closer to the truth than everything we put out there in the public right now. And with what you mentioned about the Kraken coming in, I think that's your benchmark on the other side. So you start to push these dates together, and what's feasible is probably something between 48, 56 games in that range, correct?
I agree. And I think, you know, everyone, when they heard 82 games was the priority all along, you know, people behind the scenes were kind of like, that is just aspirational. There is no chance in heck of that happening. Of course, the financials, you know, of potentially prorating player salaries and prorating TV deals and all of that, it behooves the NHL to try to get as many games in as possible. But realistically, at this point, we are looking at some type of condensed season, some type of hybrid of fans, no fans, probably some type of hybrid bubble. What we do know is what we saw in the postseason last year, the full bubble. Bill Daly told me exactly this morning. That was great. It accomplished our goal, but that is not sustainable long term. And I think we pushed it to the limits for how long we could do that exact model. And hopefully we'll never have to do it again.
Yeah, I think everybody has their fingers crossed in that. Are you a believer in a Canadian-only division next year?
You know, if the border situation remains exactly as it is today, I think it's necessary. But if there's any budging from now, maybe over the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I do think they could avoid it. So we'll see what happens.
Do you have any idea, after talking to Daly, when they'll make a decision by? Do they have a timeline in place where they feel they need to have a more cemented plan in place?
No, there's really not to that point. They haven't formally met with the NHLPA's committee that they have to negotiate with yet, because everyone understands that right now they do have the luxury of time. And right now there's so much uncertainty that they can't nail down something granular. I do think, you know, he said that they can pull it together in the same time frame or time speed that they pulled together the tournament. Obviously, there's the consideration of getting guys aware so they can come back for training camp. And I do know that it is more likely than not that those 7 teams that didn't make the tournament will get extra additional training camp time. So we shall see.
That's an interesting note. Emily, excellent work this week. We're all wanting hockey back, but these are big picture topics and you tackled them all. Thank you very much for sharing some time with us here this morning.
It's my pleasure. I always enjoy a conversation with you. So thanks for the great topics.